This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
There is a queer angle to every issue, and we will find it. Don't expect us to be nice. Don't expect it to be safe. And don't expect us to be politically correct. Nothing is sacred. We find the queer, profane, and cringeworthy wherever we can, here on Joy 94.9. Is nothing sacred?
Hi there, Joysters. You are on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. It's 2 minutes past 10. And thanks, Sammy, for the wet spot tonight. And I'm here in the studio with Patrick. Hello, Patrick.
Hi, Jim. It's so nice to be back.
And Steph. Hello, Steph.
Hello, Jim.
And James. Hello, James.
Hello, hello.
And we've got such a big guest list tonight that we're actually having to rotate our guests through the studio.
Well, you know, I think that we often do, Jim. People think that, you know, they magically appear on their transporter, but the reality is that we just a very, very good logistics, no logicians.
We have a good revolving door, but
plus someone who understands science will have to explain what that is. Because, and that was a good segue. Coming up right now, we have Dr. George Aranda. I'm saying that correctly, aren't I?
I usually go with Aranda.
Aranda. Right. Well, I know now. Aranda. Hello. Thank you for joining us in the studio. And you are a research fellow of science education with Deakin.
Yep, that's correct.
Oh, fantastic. So what are we having a little chat about, Steph? Because this is your field, far away.
My favourite, science. So George is actually many, many things. He is
many things.
Yes, an academic at Deakin working on projects around how science is taught in schools, and also the author of a blog, which is Science Book a Day, and also a man with various interests and passions. So I think I'm interested to talk to you about this blog and, I guess, the role that it plays.
Yep.
So what was it that inspired the project?
I'm someone who's interested in science and science communication, and I'm particularly interested in narrative, because I think a lot of people think that science is all about equations and the periodic table and going to the moon and that kind of thing, whereas science, I like to talk to my students that tell them that science is about stories. It's about scientists and things that they were trying to do or problems they're trying to solve. And to let them know that science isn't just a straight line from A to B, that people go all over the place trying to find their answer. And scientists can, you know, they can be nasty. They can have affairs and they can steal each other's research and those kind of things as well. It's not just Newton and Einstein. There are a lot of other things to look at.
There's plenty of narrative in Newton and Einstein, though.
Oh, there is, but
apples falling off trees is a story.
Yes, no, I mean, you know, who developed calculus and all those kinds of things are interesting stories as well, but quite often we just mythologize certain people.
And a lot of the time it's not correct, isn't it? You know, there's all these this information about how Darwin wasn't really the one who came up with what we now consider Darwinism and the origin of species, and he just happened to be the guy who wrote it down first and gets all the credit.
No, that's right, and quite often it's the person who might have the idea first isn't necessarily the one who develops it to the nth degree and gets the credit for it in the end.
So there's been a lot of books so far. What's been your favourite? What's really, I guess, captured your interest?
Probably my most favourite book is a book that came out last year called How Dogs Love Us, which is because my background, I did a PhD in cognitive neuroscience, so I was looking at brain scans of people and that kind of thing. And the book's about a neuroscientist who developed a way to scan the brains of dogs to try and find out what dogs are actually thinking, and not in terms of a verbal dialogue like we have, but what they actually think when they look at us or their food or other dogs or those kind of things as well.
And don't they just think, oh, what's that nutcase doing?
They are in your house, Jim.
Why is that person patting me on the head when I hate being patted on my head?
Yeah, no, and looking at those kind of things is something you can actually do in a scanner, and to teach dogs to actually sit still in a scanner for long enough was quite an interesting story as well. So, yeah, that's been my favourite book.
Is there anything I mean, having studied science before, and I was talking to you about before the show about your work in
It's cognitive neuroscience.
Cognitive neuroscience. So now having this blog and, I guess, focusing more on the historical and social stuff, has that changed your perception of science?
No, it was kind of the thing. I'd studied one thing for a number of years, and I realised I'm just not interested in the brain itself. I'm interested in physics and chemistry and psychology and biology and all the other things. And
are
so,
you interested in the ethics of science?
I am interested in the ethics of science, yeah.
Because that's one of the things that I find that we come across scientists. We've been having scientists on this show on a regular basis, mm-hmm. and quite a few of them have got no idea of the ethics of what they're doing.
Right, okay.
And I find it quite disturbing, in fact, that people can make decisions about why they're studying a particular issue and then don't understand what the outcomes could possibly be.
I suppose it also comes back, though, to in the education of science, where if you give them a narrative and you humanise the situation, and maybe that's what the situation is with these particular people. I personally didn't feel that, Jim, but that if they felt like they had a lack of ethics, is that when you're looking at things very black and white and very factual and very, this is your equation. Whereas, as we've obviously addressed, there is a huge amount in the narrative about the ethics of science. I was thinking in my head when you first said that. About the whole thing between Tesla and Edison.
Yes.
With the electrocution of Topsy. So if anyone doesn't know that, please check it. Well, actually, don't. It's very horrifying, but it's electrocution of an elephant. But
it's bound to be on Wikipedia.
Oh, it's definitely on YouTube. I once saw it. But the important thing coming back here, I suppose, is that having a narrative of science, it humanizes it. It becomes more part of this world instead of this other clinical, sanitized, white lab coat kind of area.
But it's really, really important, isn't it, that the discussion about whether science is objective or subjective is put out there into the mainstream of science education and science discussion, because the questions that people ask as scientists are going to be not objective but subjective, because they'll be decided by their own belief and value system, even if they don't recognise their own belief.
Yeah, no,
and
that
value
definitely
system.
Comes into it. And we have examples of scientists who skew the evidence towards a particular end. And quite often, scientists are not really aware of the possible applications of what they're doing, which is something that they do need to be aware of, definitely.
I guess my response to that would be that scientists who bias things would be not as good at science as people who don't. And so that's a flaw of the individual rather than of the system. And also there's the context as well, that society puts pressure on scientists to study particular things. So
that's a very unsystem approach to it, because it's obviously a flaw of the system, because the system allows people to do it. And a good system would, in fact, have a series of questions that people should ask when they enter a scientific pursuit, to say, what is the impact, what are the potential impacts of this work on the population as a whole? And if you don't ask that question, then you shouldn't be doing the work.
Well, you're also living within a society, so you've got that value system that society places on certain things, whether they should or shouldn't be done.
Just to bring things back to the blog, so one of the things I was interested in talking to you about were some books about women in science, and particularly two about women in science at a time when they had fewer opportunities than today. And the two that you flagged with me were The Girls of Atomic City and also Rocket Girl, about America's first female rocket scientist in the 50s. So do you think there's a tension between how people might see women in science at this time and the work that was actually going on?
I think we've progressed to a degree, and I guess the times of those two stories in particular, really, women were limited in what they could actually do, and because of circumstances such as the Second World War, they were propelled into roles that they formerly didn't have before. And I guess there is a bit of tension, because we still have a difference in representation between men and women in science, and that is still work still needs to be done in that kind of field.
We do have to finish up pretty soon. The other thing I was interested in, so a lot of these two books and others on your site are about the history of science. Can you tell our listeners a bit about why it's important to document and read about the history of science rather than just what's happening right now?
Yeah, and I think it's important because we need to know where we've come, what has happened in the past and what mistakes have been made in the past so we don't make those mistakes again with certain fields. And also to, and because now a lot of the things, for example, from the Second World War are becoming declassified, so we can hear the stories that may have been classified before, so how scientists became more involved with the Second World War, how women were involved in, you know, developing, producing the atomic bomb, I guess, which is the story of the Girls of Atomic City, and just really trying to examine, you know, where we've come from and, you know, eventually where we're going.
If people want to have a look at the blog, how do they find it?
It's pretty easy. It's just sciencebookaday.com.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, George, for coming in and joining us on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. We'll be right back very shortly.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You are on Joy 94.9 on Is Nothing Sacred, and it's now 16 minutes past 10. I'm here with Patrick, James, Steph, and we've got in the studio Aaron Wood, who we're going to be speaking to next about kids teaching kids.
If you have anyone want to share in with the conversation with us tonight, please SMS in on 0427 Joy 949, email onair@joy.org.au, or give a call to Rob out on the front desk. Hello, Rob. Thank you very much for
Robert's doing nothing out on the front desk. He's got his shoes off. He's barefoot out there.
Yeah, well, he took his shoes off and threw them in the lake, and he'd be two steps off the water, just like the song beforehand.
Oh, really?
You didn't listen to it, Jim. You didn't listen to The Amazing Power of Hounds of Love. But moving right along.
I did get some feedback about the way we talk about the SMS, and someone said, Steph, no one's used those mobile phones with letters on them since, like, 1999. So it's 0427 569 949 or phone 1300 569 949. It doesn't sound as good, but I guess it means you can actually call.
But yeah, but we're going to get in trouble now because we're supposed to say joy.
But you can.
Joy, 94.9.
You can actually do it on smartphone, of the latest varieties of smartphones. We've got the numbers back on them. So if you've got a latest variety of smartphone, which of course you do have.
What goes around comes around.
What goes up must come down. And now we are on.
Everything old is new again.
Now let's, hello Aaron, thank you for joining us in the studio.
Thanks very much for having me. They could just keep going on and on. We could be here all night with those.
I think one day there's just going to be one show where I've not prepared anything and it's just us just saying quotes onwards and onwards.
Waste not, want not.
Shut up.
Which is a good segue really to what Kids Teaching Kids is all about.
Exactly.
On topic.
So give us a little feedback about what Kids Teaching Kids is all about.
It's easy for you to say, Patrick. Kids Teaching Kids is a program where essentially they swap roles with their teachers. So just as it sounds, they actually become teachers. We take them through up to a six-month process about what makes good teaching and learning. And what you get out the end of that is, you know, these wonderful workshops which are by kids for kids. And, you know, obviously young people know how to communicate with each other best.
It's called peer education.
It's called peer education. It's a, you know, obviously it's steeped in a lot of good educational philosophy, but there's something magical that happens there as well. It's about, you know, kids seeing themselves up there. It's about kids knowing how to speak to each other. And the other thing too is, you know, often, you know, I hear about, you know, kids being called naive, and I think that's used as a derogatory term, but I think, you know, if I had of thought about how much it would take to start the Kids Teaching Kids program 15 years ago when I started in Mildura, that dose of naivety was actually a really good thing because I knew all the hard work that I had to put into it now. Would I have started Kids Teaching Kids? Probably not. So I think, you know, protecting that naivety, you know, adding to that a bit of academic rigour through the understanding of the topics that they choose is a really, really good thing. We've got to protect that naivety.
Can you tell our listeners a bit about the story of how this all started, I guess?
It's a good story. My father's actually, you know, out in the foyer there watching us on radio.
He still has his father to look after. Isn't that nice?
38 years old and I still can't go anywhere without my father. So what does that say about me?
He's giving the thumbs up from the studio.
But he's an integral part of this story. It goes all the way back to when I was in primary school and he was my principal and I... I wasn't the best student in the world, Patrick. I can level with you there, and I tell this story about the fact that I never got any of those gold stars, but I did realise that Dad kept those gold stars in a drawer, so I just stole them and stuck them all over my books. Anyway, so I was the sort of kid, they didn't have the term ADD, it was just little bugger back then, and that was me well and truly.
That's what I still call children today, so it's all fine.
There you go, there you go. So it's a term of endearment, really, isn't
it? Yeah, it is.
But, you know, growing up in Mildura...
There wasn't enough Ritalin in the world for you.
There was not enough Ritalin in the world for me. But I guess what happened from there, to cut a long story short, is that I grew up, you know, in a beautiful place on the mighty Murray River on King's Billabong, and that really set me on a path to want to get involved in the environment. I worked a while for the state government, but, you know, kept on wanting to get the wider public involved and wondering how do we spread this message beyond the 10 people who volunteer for just about everything. My father was in a school at the time as principal, and he was wondering how he could engage his kids with the natural environment. So it was a bit of a meeting of the minds, and the first Kids Teaching Kids event was a really modest affair on the banks of the Murray River. I think we had about 8 workshops with students teaching each other about flooding and the benefits of flooding, but it was pretty special, and then it's just grown from there. We've had 80,000 kids through the program over 15 years. Every state and territory gets involved in Target Kids Teaching Kids Week now. Even, you know, countries like South Korea and New Zealand and United States, you know, schools right across the world have picked up Kids Teaching Kids from those humble beginnings.
So... you were Young Australian of the Year in 2001 and then ended up winning the 2007 Prime Minister's Environmentalist of the Year Award. And you implied that there was a lot of work in between. Was there also, I guess, a bit of a shift in the way that you saw things? Do you still see the world the way you did back on the banks of the Murray?
What a really, really great question. I was, you know, just talking before I came in for this interview, and I think when you're involved in the environment, it's really easy to become pessimistic, particularly at this current stage. I won't sort of make any political remarks.
Oh, we all agree with you on it. Don't worry.
We do.
On this program, you can say what you like.
So should I just lie on the couch here and tell you my pain? Because it's really...
If you're comfortable doing that, I charge by the minute.
Oh, well, it's going to be a very expensive night, Patrick, I can tell you, because I've got a lot of pain to get off my chest. But, you know, it's tough being in that environmental space and, you know, keeping the optimism and the hope that we talk about for young people. I guess... in essence, the Kids Teaching Kids program keeps me going to a certain degree, because you go, you know, into politics and you see what, you know, governments are doing across the world, and you can be pretty disheartened. But then you go along to a Kids Teaching Kids event, and whether it's a special school up in the Northern Territory, you know, Aboriginal kids in remote WA studying bush tucker, or, you know, marine and environmental issues in Sydney, you go into these events, and they're different sized events. You know, they can be as small as 30 kids, right up to 1,000 kids at Carrumbelit College here locally in Melbourne. And you say, I haven't got the right not to try. I haven't got the right not to think about a more sustainable future. And my wife and I have now got a 9-month-old, Addison Grace.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And she, you know, just takes it to a whole new level. I just can't stand by and not do something.
She'll be teaching you soon, don't you worry.
She's already teaching me, Jim. She's well and truly teaching me all sorts of things. She's got me wrapped around her little finger already. Thankfully, she hasn't worked out how to get into my wallet yet, but I'm assured by everyone that it's going to be a very expensive experience for me as a father of a daughter.
Just going back to when you're having, obviously, were you saying you don't have the right not to try with this situation? I think the great thing that I saw when I was reading about Kids Teaching Kids was the fact that there's a really big emphasis on the fact that this is the next generation of leaders. And especially looking, you know, aside from, let's go away from politics, but having that real, what's the word for it? Investment into the future, I think, is very important, especially when you're looking at places now where it feels like, and not casting any sort of feeling on governments, but certainly governments in general like to focus on the now. Or are we going to focus on the now for people who may not be able to see what the results are and the consequences for the future? And so I think it's a wonderful thing, and a very, very huge congratulations for you for how far this has gone so far.
I appreciate it. And there's a great quote, and it's a lovely quote. Young people are less than 20% of the population, but they're 100% of our future. I like that quote, but I want to add to that, they've got so much to offer right now. And I think sometimes, you know, again, that naivety, that optimism, that hope, they do come up the world from a different way that than adults do. Maybe they haven't set the boundaries that we've set as we've, you know, stumbled a few times. Maybe they haven't got the vested interests that, that, you know, some of the adults that make decisions have got. So I think that, yes, there is an investment in the future, but they also do have so much to offer right now. And I think we need a different perspective on things at the moment, because we're so bogged down in as you said, Patrick, the immediate, you know, return on investment. And I think when you look at the word sustainability, it's not a actually an environmental term. It just means being able to sustain forever, you know, economically, socially, and environmentally. And when you look at a much longer term horizon, it becomes very clear what you should do, that you shouldn't, you know, exceed your water use, that you shouldn't ruin your agricultural produce, that you shouldn't ruin your oceans. It becomes a really, really simple equation once you look at it like that.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Hi there, Joysters. You are on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. And we have got some messages. We've got a message here from Scotty who says, thank you for playing my favourite Kate Bush song from my favourite album. Patrick, I feel for you. I want a ticket to Ms. Bush also.
And I just want to say to Scotty, it is my favourite album also. Unfortunately, I cannot play Hello Earth because I do not have Hello Earth with me. I can play it on piano. So, Scotty,
we don't have piano with us, but next week we're going to make Patrick bring it in and play it.
And play it. Anyway, we are speaking with Aaron Wood, who is the Managing Director of Kids Teaching Kids. Hello, Aaron, again. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Aaron, I just wanted to ask also what some of the outcomes that the kids themselves have had, because obviously it's driven by them. Are there any similarities? Are there any things that they get really excited about?
Graduates?
Yeah, it's a great question because, you know, we talk about heart, head and hand. That's what we espouse with Kids Teaching Kids. The kids are passionate about it. Many of them want to take action in the environment. The action phase it comes later. We first get them engaged with the head, the understanding, so they research their topic inside and out. Now, that topic could be water, waste, biodiversity, energy, sustainable agriculture. It could be their local creek system. It doesn't matter. But then we ask them to take some form of action. So out of the end of that, what you get is these kids essentially using their voice to inspire on-ground action. So, you know, kids have gone in and presented to their local council, and the council has donated the time of their trucks to remove rubbish, for example, or they've adopted their local creek and found an endangered species there and, you know, worked with conservation volunteers or even Melbourne Zoo. One of them's working with Melbourne Zoo to look at...
They'll probably find new species then.
Well, the great project they're doing is actually rehabilitation of bandicoot habitat, and they're doing a release program with them. So even though it's Kids Teaching Kids, they're dealing with real-world issues. And, you know, whether it is alternative energy or an endangered species, or a lot of the coastal schools focus on marine issues. And one of the big ones, which I've found really interesting, and I always learn something out of a Kids Teaching Kids workshop, is this microplastics. It's getting a lot of airplay at the moment.
We spoke about microplastics on the show last Phillip Island.
There you go. Well, the kids, one of the student groups are studying microplastics, and, you know, they're in your shampoos and your exfoliants and the rest of it. They're too small to be picked up by your treatment plant. They enter our waterways and, you know, have an impact on our marine life. And we don't know what sort of toxic buildup they'll have over time, whether they'll then indeed get into the flesh of fish that humans eat, all sorts of, you know, catastrophic consequences as a result.
It would be very likely that would probably enter through there with that, would enter into a fish's flesh, wouldn't it?
Yeah, fish do build up heavy metals in particular.
Yeah, mercury, so. I know, was...
Because other fish will eat them, and so whatever's in the gut of the fish that's been eaten is going to somehow be metabolised and absorbed by the fish that does the eating. So it's just a food chain issue.
Exactly. And the food chain is all the food web, or that's a common workshop that kids will choose. And sort of back to James' point, what they would do is they would research that topic on microplastics, and then we'd ask them to have an action phase. Now, that could be writing to their local politician. It could be writing to companies which currently have microplastics in their products. It could be an awareness campaign. So it doesn't just stop at them developing the workshop. But I guess, you know, we're often asked, you know, what is the outcome of this program? It is an education program. So the outcome of it is that these kids go through what it is to be a teacher. So regardless of whether they keep on in the environmental field, to teach others is one of the highest forms of learning. If you look at the learning pyramid, we retain about 5% of what we hear through lecture. A lot of it goes in one ear and out the other. But if we teach others, there's 90% retention. So I think we'd make more room in the curriculum for teaching others if we, you know, paid adherence to that learning pyramid.
If other people are interested, how do they find out about, you know, Kids Teaching Kids and other kids that might be listening to the show?
Yeah, absolutely. They can go to kidsteachingkids.com.au, kidsteachingkids.com.au. All the schools that are actually signed up to the program appear on the map, and so you can actually click on the dot and see which event is taking place in Target Kids Teaching Kids Week from September 8 to 12. We've got over 12,000 students and teachers taking part. Next week, yeah. So it all kicks off next week.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us on the show, Aaron. It was a pleasure and a doddle.
Thanks very much for having me.
Did we do a website plug? I just disappeared for 2 seconds.
Yes, we did.
We did do a website plug. Hooray. Sorry, we got a message and I got distracted.
It was kidsteachingkids.com.au.
Beautifully
fantastic.
Said.
So
We will put it on our Facebook page.
I guess one other thing I was curious about. So if there's anyone who's listening who is a school student or who is a parent of a school student.
Or a teacher,
how do they get involved with Kids
Teaching
Kids?
Or a principal.
They contact us through the website, all the contact details there, and we go right down to kindergarten, right up to year 10, 11, 12. So it can fit for any year level.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Aaron. You're listening to Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. Coming up, we have a chat with Lisa Dibb from Slutwalk Melbourne.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9 is nothing sacred. It is now 24 minutes to 11. Hello, Patrick. Hello, James. Hello, Steph.
Hello.
And hello, Lisa Dibb.
Hi.
Lisa is from Slutwalk Melbourne, and you're here to talk to us about next Saturday, isn't it?
This Saturday.
This Saturday. Yep.
This Saturday? I don't have anything to wear.
Well, have to go shopping on Saturday morning because you don't have to be there until midday.
Fair point.
Yeah, and also one of the most important aspects of Slutwalk is that there are no dress codes.
Fantastic.
Yes. So wear literally whatever you like.
You can wear high heels if you like. You think you can walk in high heels, you can wear them.
Oh, yeah, you've got to be comfortable. Yeah. If there are any rules about the dresses, that you need to be comfortable and happy in what you're wearing. That's it. Yeah.
So what has been the big change? We're both hankering for giving questions. We're just like, we're question piranhas.
There's plenty of me to go around.
I'll arm wrestle you, Pat.
All right. Well, you know what? You'll win, so you go.
Well, I think the first question has to be for people who haven't heard about it. Can you tell our listeners a bit about Slutwalk?
I guess Slutwalk started in, I think, 2011. It was sort of the impetus for it was a Toronto police officer was doing a talk, and in the midst of his talk advised that women should not dress, quote, like sluts, in order to not get assaulted, which is...
So putting the blame back on the victim.
Well, yeah, it's backward-ass logic at the best of times. But so that just kind of spurred on this. I mean, it is a worldwide movement. I mean, there's been... there's been the obvious walks in Toronto where it started, but, I mean, it's gone to India, Singapore, Melbourne, obviously, New York... Brazil, it's gone everywhere. And I mean, the best thing is it crosses all kinds of, races and cultures, because it brings these people together in what should be an incredibly simple and easy to understand message, which is that it's not okay to blame the victim, ever.
But it's a sort of a celebration in many ways, isn't it?
Oh, of course it is. I mean, it's certainly not, it's not a negative day.
It's not like a vigil. It's a celebration.
No, it's. I mean, there are elements of remembrance for survivors. And
it's certainly come a long way from Reclaim the Night.
Yeah, well, I mean, Reclaim the Night's a separate thing, and you know they are different. But I mean, Slutwalk has within it a very powerful message that I'm sure people find both sad because it is unnecessary that we need to have. This
and Slutwalk had a fabulous afternoon tea called Slutty.
Yes, yes, I was there. I had a craft stall with my little feminist crafts, which I specialise in.
I bought something.
Oh, let's chat later.
What?
I bought a lovely piece of needlepoint.
Oh yes, that's by
by Jessamy.
Jessamy, yeah, she's also on the slut wall team. Hi, Jessamy, if you're listening. Yeah, she's brilliant. But
it's on my wall, Jessamy, already.
Yay! Props to her. The Slut Tea was, you know, the sort of fundraiser and the get to know Saturday will be the walk, which for those who can make it, it'll be at 12 o'clock at
State Library.
We'll be going to Fed Square, and hopefully we'll all, you know, sit around and have a drink afterwards and chat and ruminate.
Lisa, correct me if I'm wrong, but...
I will.
we can tell.
a big part of, I suppose, that for the gay community over years has been reclaiming words because they are very powerful. Mm-hmm. How much in the beginning of Slut Walk is it about reclaiming that word and other words for women and being proud of them rather than being having negative connotations and like putting people down?
It's not even necessarily about reclaiming the word, because a lot of people don't want to use the word. I mean, that is obviously probably one of the main points of conflict.
Contention.
Yes, where people don't like that word. And one of the main taglines of the whole movement is that it's a controversial name, not a controversial message. Mm. Some people find it hard to go past the name, which we can understand. We certainly don't blame anyone for not liking that, especially because sometimes it's quite triggering for them and other issues like that. So it's certainly not about taking back the name and using it for our own purposes, which people are happy to do. I am happy to say I'm a slut. What, you know, that's fine.
For I know
me.
That, I
that's,
am.
That's, exactly. That's, you know. That's,
oh, I'm very happy to say.
So we've that's heard the, you know, way
we,
like, too much.
You know, we can do that, and the part of the movement is the freedom to be able to say yes, you are. But I would totally sympathise with people who don't want to and who don't want to have that as part of their message and their walk.
But it is fantastically symbolic in terms of the origin of using the term slut from that stupid statement. And you hear those statements time and time again from people saying...
I still hear them.
If people only dressed properly, they'd be... you know, safer and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's a nauseating sort of cycle of idiocy that keeps happening, of people who equate a woman's dress sense or the way she acts or how much she drinks with somehow her sexual morality, as if, I mean, as...
Or the ability of men who are possibly unknown to her to control their own behaviour.
Oh, of course. I mean, it is of course up to a woman to control what men think of her and what.
Well,
men,
women
what
are men... so powerful. That's the problem, isn't it?
Oh well, you know, there's that old thing of the old stereotype of the woman who can walk into the club and have any man she wants because men are just sex hungry beasts who will take whatever walks up to them. I mean, that's a stereotype of men too.
Not in this studio, I'm sorry, Lisa.
Oh damn. No, it's an unfair stereotype on both ends that a man can't control himself and that a woman is automatically
responsible for that.
Responsible for a man's intentions towards her. Also that a woman is trying to say something about her sexual morality by what she wears. I mean, a short skirt doesn't mean sexually available in the same way that a long dress doesn't mean, you know, virginal or frigid.
Exactly. Yeah. We'll be coming back very shortly, continue talking to Lisa Dibb about Slut Walk Melbourne coming up this Saturday. You're listening to Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You're listening to Is Nothing Sacred here on Joy 94.9. The time is 10:45. Oh, wow. The time flies. And we are speaking with Lisa Dibb. Gosh, why did I forget your name? I just said it 2 seconds ago.
I'm deeply offended.
She's mesmerising, that's why.
She is mesmerising. I saw the fantastic new shoes that she bought, which were fantastic flowery Doc Martens.
They're not real Doc Martens. They're Target ripoffs because I am poor. But that's fine. I like them anyway.
It's like the reverse. It's like saying that it's Oh, I can't think of the word. We'll come up with a word later, which is just like living fabulously on a budget.
They're a genuine imitation fake.
Thank you.
I've got you know, champagne taste on a minimum wage was a...
That's it, yeah. Broke with expensive taste.
Yeah, exactly.
Champagne taste, beer budget.
Yeah. Now, we are speaking about Slutwalk Melbourne, which is coming up on Saturday.
12 noon at the State Library forecourt.
In case we haven't hammered that home
Swanson
yet.
Swanson Street. Is there a website?
Yeah, it's slutwalkmelbourne.com.au.
And is there a blog?
Well, there's a blog on the website where there's a lot of people have shared their stories, including myself, of various... personal anecdotes, I suppose. If you go on there, obviously there's a trigger warning on the whole website, really. It is very heartening to hear people's stories about personal anecdotes and the reasons that they got into Slutwalk, because everybody who is involved with it has their own reasons for being so passionate about it.
Can I ask you a question, I guess, more broadly as a feminist? I'm assuming you identify as a feminist. Is that a fair assumption to make?
Yeah. Bang on. Yeah.
It'd be very funny if it was just like, what? No.
No, I'm a men's rights activist.
Oh.
I saw on Facebook recently and also saw that there was articles about this, with this campaign with women, especially young women, saying, I'm not a feminist because XYZ, followed by a reason that is usually, in my view, not reflects a misunderstanding of what feminism is.
Equating misandry with feminism is often the concept, as well as that the fact that they have, I think we were talking about this earlier before, and it was the fact that the fact that they can make that statement is itself a testament to the power
of feminism.
Yes.
It's pure ignorance, really. I mean, it's effing stupid.
Well, I think sometimes as well that people assume there's a very definition of feminism rather than a broad, you know, many types of feminisms. So I guess my question is about, do you have any ideas about how we can, what can we do about that, or how can we re-engage that group of young women who say they don't need feminism, it's not relevant to them?
Going in with education is very important. I mean, like, when I look at the kind of hardline femo I am now, it's bizarre to think that there was a point in my life when I would have been probably one of those girls who saw feminists the way society likes to paint them, which is as screeching harpies and
anti-men.
Yeah, misandrous, bubbling around a bubbling cauldron, you know.
Wearing Doc Martens.
Drinking men's tears. It's an unfair stereotype that unfortunately popular culture likes to play with to the detriment of a lot of really good ideas. But yeah, having education is important, and just showing these women that what feminists do is so important, and it's just good. It makes you feel good to be a feminist. Like, I've never been as happy as I am when I'm around like-minded women, and, you know, we know that we're trying to make a difference, even if you're not, you know, saving the world
You haven't managed to get anywhere near equal pay or equal rights in...
Look, we're getting there, okay? You know, I don't expect it to be done by the end of this week, but, you know, it's hard to put a deadline on it.
I read somewhere the other day that it was 160 years away if we progress at the same rate that we've been progressing recently.
That's a depressing thought, so I'm choosing not to believe it. I'm going to say that it would be much sooner than that if I have my way. But it's purely about not also going in and saying to these women... That they're stupid or that they're because a lot of people do, they let their rage, which is understandable when dealing with people who
stupidity.
You know, well, people who are saying things like, I'm not a feminist, I love men, because it is an idiotic thing to say, but you know, you can't go in and just say you're an idiot, you don't deserve feminism,
because up goes the barrier.
Yeah, exactly. You need to come at them in a way that says, look, I just think that, you know, I think that you're mistaken on a lot of the things you believe. If I show you, you know, if I show you the righteous path, then then and if you still think the way you think, then you know, maybe we're going to be at loggerheads. But you know, I'll show you these facts and maybe I can change your mind.
And everyone will be walking the righteous path this Saturday for Slut Walk Melbourne. Seamless. At 12. Yeah, thank you. I will say you led it up for me there. So
I didn't even
you.
Mean to. Look at this chemistry we've got here.
I know it's
Segway City in here tonight.
Segway City is exactly. But Slut Walk Melbourne happening at the State Library at 12 o'clock this Saturday. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure.
No worries. Thank you.
Can we also just clarify? So it's not just women, it's for people of all genders?
Everyone.
Everyone, come all.
Everyone is...
You can even take your dog if it's on a lead.
Yes. I'm going to be bringing my dog. Hi, Sasha, if you're listening. The only thing, obviously, you know, you can wear whatever you want and you know, bring a banner, do what you like. But it's just about survivors first, because that's the priority.
You are listening to Is Nothing Sacred here on Joy 94.9. If you have any comments that you want to make from tonight's show, we will be able to have a little bit more time to chat about them coming up at the end. SMS 0427 JOY, which is 569-949, or email onair@joy.org.au. Just like the fantastic Sonia, who is talking a lot about how she loves a good Kate Bush song. Maybe she hopes that she can come to Oz. A petition, perhaps, Patrick? I know I'm one step ahead of you there, Sonia, who is the presenter of Sci-Fi and Scream Tuesdays. And also Scotty again saying that maybe we could do a Kate Bush hour. Dear God, I want to very much, Scotty.
No, only doing that if Patrick comes dressed as Kate Bush and does all the Kate Bush songs
I
live.
I think I'm going to be singing Wuthering Heights.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Yes, Joysters, you are on Joy, 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 Joy.
That was quite accurate, Jim. I'm impressed.
Joy, 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 Joy.
Joy 94.9. This is Nothing Sacred. This is Jim, and I'm here with Patrick and James and Steph, and we've had a great show tonight.
Fantastic show. We had in first Dr. George Aranda speaking about science education. We had Aaron Wood, Managing Director of Kids Teaching Kids Week, which is next week. It is next week.
Starts September the 8th, which is must be about Monday.
It's Monday next week, yes, we're going to be on again.
We've got that covered because we're running a radio show.
Yes. And also, of course, Lisa Dibb from Slut Walk Melbourne, which is on Saturday at 12 p.m., in case you haven't been listening. And noon, why weren't you?
Noon on the steps of the State Library forecourt in Swanston Street on the corner of Latrobe Street. So everybody be there.
And if you've got a dog, bring it on a lead.
On a lead, please.
Yes. I think that's all from us tonight, gang. Thank you so much. Thank you, James. Thank you, Steph.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you, Patrick, for pushing all those buttons and sliding all those slides.
I thought you were about to say sliding all the knobs.
Oh, yeah, sliding all those knobs.
We'd be lost without you.
Oh, bless your cotton socks.
And thank you all the listeners who messaged in, and then we had a number of messages tonight, and that's really good.
Yes, from Scotty and Sonia. And
Scotty, we'll work on that Kate Bush show.
Believe me, I am going to be doing Wuthering, Wuthering, Wuthering Heights. And on that note, Heathcliff, it's me, Kathy. I can't do it.
Okay, everybody, it's 10:59 and the
Lady and the Camp.
It's coming up immediately after us. So good night all.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.